With Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Memorial Day savings for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Welcome to the Peter King Podcast. We've got a different podcast that we're going to be starting. I'm going to be doing some work now with Paul Burmeister, my friend at NBC Sports. And we will be having Paul to discuss the news of the week in the NFL. And I'll also be having guests every week. This week, I'm going to play a good chunk of my interview with Brigham Young quarterback Zach Wilson, who was the big lead of my column this week, Football Morning in America. So Paul and I are going to chat a bit. Then we'll get into Zach Wilson and see how you like this pod. Anyway, Paul, welcome. Thanks for joining me this week.
Hey, Peter, thank you very much. I'm very much looking forward to this, and I feel like the lucky fan. So many of them out there who read you every Monday morning. I'm the guy who kind of gets to pick out what I found most interesting and follow up on it. So seeing it all through my quarterback lens, I'm excited to get to know Zach Wilson a little bit better here today.
Oh, that's great. Good. You know, there's one thing I want to ask you about sort of college football, because I know you played, and it always interests me when someone who has played college football starts to look at the new crop of college football players when they're coming out, because over the next 2 months, we're going to be bombarded with all of these guys. And yet, I'm sure from your perspective, having played the game, what is this time of year like for you, and how interested are you in the guys like Zach Wilson?
It's always been, I mean, really my favorite time of the NFL calendar. And like everyone else, Peter, I love the game. Sundays are fantastic. Monday nights, Thursday nights are all fun. But I have come to enjoy this time of the year so much. And I think part of the reason is, like you brought up, I was one of these guys. I mean, I was at the Combine in 94. I loved the process. I loved the challenge of it. So from there, you know, learning about it, and it's such a great way to get to know the rosters, Peter. Like when you're watching a game on Sunday and the backup tight end makes a play, you got to know him in March 4 years ago because you're in love with this process. So I really enjoy it because I've been through it. And just now, as someone who covers it for a living, I find it so helpful to really get to know the rosters and understand the kids.
You got to tell people a little bit about your time in college football. You were, you know, obviously you were at Iowa about what, 25 years ago now, and a little bit more than that. And tell us a little bit about your career.
So I was a decent quarterback in Iowa early to mid 90s. I spent most of my career as a backup. End of my junior year in 92, I played quite a bit, and I played my entire senior year in 93. I did well enough for us to win more games than we lose and get invited to the combine. So I was around a decent level of football. I wasn't great at it. I was good enough at it to know what it was about, to get a sniff in the NFL. I was a free agent with the Vikings for a little bit. So if anybody remembers me, Peter, they're a pretty big fan of the sport. I wasn't exactly a big household name for a long time, but I did get a chance to play some. I got a little bit of a look at that at the next level. I feel like it's helped me a lot here as I transition to the next part of my life here.
I'm going to let you fire away in a second, but there's one part of the Zach Wilson story that I bet you really could identify with. And that is, a year ago at this time, at this exact time, Zach Wilson was told by the coaches at Brigham Young his quarterback coach, passing game coordinator specifically, we're opening the job up for competition. You are not a lock to start in 2020. And so from that point to today, Zach Wilson has gone from a guy who might not even start at Brigham Young to a guy who might be the second pick in the draft. Was that an identifiable thing when you read that?
Right away. I'm always trying to draw parallels and compare guys to what we've seen in the past. And there's some real comparisons that work. And you brought it up in the podcast and the article on Monday to Joe Burrow, just in the fact that he wasn't really that highly thought of a year ago, then had unbelievable production his most recent year of playing. But unlike Joe, I mean, like you said, he had to win his job back before the season even started. So it does work to say, hey, it's kind of like what we saw with Joe last year, but I don't remember someone who might be the second overall pick in the draft. And some may look at it and say, you know what? You should look at him just as hard as you do Trevor Lawrence and make sure that Jacksonville would make the right choice there. And it's someone who was not only unknown a year ago, but had to go to camp to win his job before he even started this road to being a high pick.
Yeah. I find the whole story really interesting because to me, when you hear about a kid who wants it so bad that for 6 or 7 weeks, he gets in his car on a Friday afternoon in Provo, Utah, and drives 675 miles to LA or to Southern California, south of LA, because he wants to get a little bit better that weekend. The amazing thing about that part of the story, Paul, you know, last year is that, you know, he basically did not have, he didn't really know what was going to happen in his future. But the only thing he knew is that this is the most important year of my football career. And if I don't do everything humanly possible to try to win this job, and if it's a little bit of a hardship to drive 10 hours back and or 10 hours down there and 10 hours back every week, I'm going to do that. I will take that hardship. And I think if you talk to John Beck, the guy who was training him, down in Huntington Beach, California, I think he'll say that he got markedly better in a few aspects of the game, and particularly in being able to drill the ball, you know, to all parts of the field, which, you know, in the NFL, I think if you can't do that, you're probably not going to have a long career.
And I think that really showed up on film. I mean, albeit, and this is one of the challenges that evaluators are going to have for him, he was doing it against Texas State and Louisiana Tech instead of LSU and Texas. But you can see that pretty much every game he played with that compact delivery, driving the ball downfield into tough spots. And as I was, I thought first when I read it, Peter, it came out this way that he was really interacting with you and kind of being real. And I heard it more as I listened to the interview, and I could really tell. And maybe it's because of that road he's taken, that what the last year has been like. I found him kind of refreshingly not very calculated.
Exactly.
Wasn't driving a message through to you, which, hey, that happens to all of us. I mean, pick any big name quarterback the last 10 years coming out. They can feel a little political. And I thought he was just hanging out with you, being very real. And my next thought was, this has to be a product of the non-traditional road he's taken and how much humility he must have for what's happened these last 9 months.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it, Paul. And that's one of the reasons why, and Matt Casey, our producer, has suggested this. Let's just take a good chunk of, I think I spent 47 minutes, you know, on the phone talking to Zach Wilson. Let's take a good chunk of that and let's let people hear from him. And I think, and that's one of the reasons why we're doing that today and this week on the podcast, letting you actually hear his voice and what he's like. But I just think that when you have not had people telling you your whole life how wonderful you are, and he hasn't. When he was a senior in high school, he went through his senior season in high school, and he was probably going to Weber State. And then a little bit after that, entering the year, he was probably going to Weber State and then to Boise State. But he had also talked to a few schools, but he just wasn't sure who was going to offer him. And, Paul, I find this part of it really interesting. I didn't write about this, but you'll hear from him talk about this. I think he really wanted to go to Cal, but Cal did not want him to come as a mid-year. And for those who won't understand what he's saying, I wish I would have said during the course of the conversation, Zach, let's talk about what a mid-year is. He had worked hard in high school to be able to graduate in December in high school and to enroll wherever he was going to go to college in the winter term. If they were on a quarter system, he was going to go winter and spring. If it was semester, it was just going to be the second semester. But he wanted to do that because he wanted to have a chance to play as a freshman. So even though everybody out there is looking at him, you're a three-star recruit, dude. You're going to be lucky to get into these schools. But he wanted to have a chance. So Cal, I guess, I don't even know this, but I guess Cal frowns on mid-years. You know, they want the traditional entry into college. You know, you come in the summer with your teammates and then you enroll in the fall and you do the traditional way of school. But that meant so much to him that, you know, when he found out he couldn't do it or they wouldn't do it for him at Cal, he started to look around. And the other interesting thing about this is, at least I find it extremely interesting, his family is a Utah family. And look, I'm not from Utah. You're not from Utah. So maybe we don't really understand what that means. But it's like you live in Connecticut and, you know, there's almost a line of demarcation in the middle of the state. People from the north like the Red Sox, people from the south like right. The Yankees, you know, or at least that's the way it was when I was young. But what was really interesting about that is that his family was a huge Utah family. You know, his mom had generations of their family had gone to Utah. His dad played at Utah. He had his Utah jersey is in a frame hanging in their basement. His uncle founded the lacrosse program at Utah. His uncle is the founder of JetBlue Airways. Airlines. Wow. So you have all of these things going on, and Utah really doesn't have any interest in him as a player. So they don't recruit him hard. And then right at the end, this is a really interesting part of the story. He didn't get into it very much, but I found it's a really interesting part of the story that when Zach was in high school in November of his senior year, his year is basically over and he's now trying to figure out where exactly am I going to college. Brigham Young fired Ty Detmer as offensive coordinator, and Ty Detmer had recruited and Brigham Young had signed Ty Detmer's nephew to be the quarterback that year in their recruiting class. It turns out after they fire Ty Detmer, they don't really like this quarterback and, you know, his nephew. And so he goes somewhere else. I think he went to Texas A&M Kingsville. But now here's a situation where, you know, the BYU quarterback, the BYU quarterback roster needs a true freshman. So, you know, that's when the head coach there really started to put the hard sell on Zach Wilson, and that's how he ended up there. But it's all a very interesting story. And you know what you find out, Paul? I'm sure you know because you lived it. Look, if you're a quarterback and you want to play college football, it's not always up to you where you're going. You know, I mean,
for most of them, yeah.
It's a musical chairs thing. And that's the way it was with Zach Wilson. I think, look, people at Boise were really bitter when he didn't go there because they had not recruited a quarterback after Zach Wilson said, I'm coming. But anyway, that's just the business of college football. I know it's weird, and that's a long, involved story, but it's kind of crazy how he ended up at BYU.
Well, I feel like he's always going to be, at least for a little while here, the next couple months, be connected to and compared to Trevor Lawrence. And listening to that story and kind of humanizing him and understanding why he's wired the way he's wired right now because of how he had to even just get to BYU. Trevor Lawrence, I met with Trevor. NBC has the All-Star game in San Antonio, U.S. All-American game.
Yeah.
And we met with Trevor. He was the number one recruit in the nation that year. We sat down with him before. And he felt like a 27-year-old man instead of a 17-year-old man because he could have gone anywhere in the country. He was so used to this situation, so polished, so cards close to the vest. So here's this guy that Zach is being compared to now, could have gone anywhere. He's going to Clemson, and Kelly Bryant was there, a very good starter.
Right.
He was, yeah, we met with him on a Friday. He was going to campus on Monday, and he was going to beat him out. He was going to go there, not sit and hope I can play, hope the coaches know my name. He was going to start winning that job that next Monday. And now these two guys are being compared, you know, 3 or 4 years later, that the top two picks likely for quarterbacks in the draft. And they couldn't have traveled more different roads the last 4 or 5 years.
I really find, Paul, when, you know, the part of his story, Zach Wilson's story, that I think is really going to hold him in good stead, he's used to adversity.
Right.
And, you know, he was awful at the end of his second year at BYU. He wins the starting job midway through his true freshman year. And then his second year, he's got a labrum injury that he had surgery on before the season. His arm's never really right the whole year. And then in a game against Toledo early in the season, he gets an injury to his throwing hand. So his whole year, he doesn't feel right. Plays poorly toward the end, and they open it up. And, you know, that you couldn't get further away from, you know, between him and Trevor Lawrence.
Right.
And you know, we should probably expand a little bit to where the top of the draft is right now. Because, look, I've talked to now three teams in the last couple of weeks that I think are probably going to pick a quarterback. And I've asked them for their rating of the players. And one head coach in the NFL thought he was really being kind of gutsy when he said, hey, I got Zach Wilson, my second quarterback on the list. And I said, well, you know, I've talked to two other, one personnel guy and one coach who also have him second. And who knows where it'll end up. But the most interesting thing, Paul, I think is, the different valuations of Alabama quarterback Mac Jones. Because I'll tell you, there are some people who think he might go in the top 10. And some people might say, oh, my God, that's ridiculous. He's the fifth quarterback in this draft. And if I can just go on a little riff right now, one of the problems with all of the draft experts, and I do not have any qualms with anybody doing that for a living or anything, but it's almost like because you only hear from Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, Daniel Jeremiah, and that ilk, you only hear from them, you know, they're the ones you're hearing from in October, November, December, January. So that by the time the end of the Super Bowl rolls around, you figure, okay, the ranking of the quarterbacks is Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Zach Wilson, and, you know, and whatever it is. When in reality, I mean, Todd McShay is not in a draft room. I'm not saying that his way isn't the way it's going to fall.
Right.
But it's like we've been conditioned to say, oh, my God, Justin Fields, definitely the second quarterback in this draft. Did you see what he did against Clemson in the playoffs? Of course he is, but it very rarely turns out like that, you know, when the first round of the draft rolls around.
Yeah, a couple of things about two of those names. Mac Jones, I was really intrigued by him last year, Peter, when he came in when Tua was injured, played really well. Like it's, I think it was Michigan in a bowl game. And I'm like, man, I know the system is good. I know Nick's good. The defense is terrific, but it sure looked like he's throwing the ball better than just a system guy. And they played against Notre Dame in January this year. And right. I called the game on the radio. And I always like to get down as close as I can to these quarterbacks who I know we're going to be talking about in the spring. It's harder right now this year than it has been in years past to get down to the field. But I got as close to Mac as I could. And he throws the ball like a first-round quarterback. And I didn't think that beforehand. And I judge these guys with a pretty critical eye. The way he commands the ball, throws it, puts it where he wants. I walked away from there thinking, okay, he's going in the first. I would now love to bet anybody who wants to draw the line at 10 because I think he's going to go in the top 10. Partly because his teams get to know him, they're going to like him even better. And I just think that the need's going to push him up. So I think he goes really high. And what's really interesting to me about connecting the dots with Zach Wilson to very high in the draft of the Jets at 2, in your story, you were drawing out the details and layers so well of Zach driving to Southern California to work out with John Beck. And you said he stayed in San Clemente. And lo and behold, Sam Darnold graduated from high school in that town. And it's just fun to make that connection. I'm like, I got to bring this up to Peter because I know it's just kind of an accident that he ended up there. But the Jets' evaluation of what they think of Sam right now and what they think of Zach Wilson, as Zach is sleeping there in that town with the buddy he used to play ball with, I mean, that is, if not the best trigger point of the draft, it's one of the most fun trigger points of this year's top 10.
See, I didn't even think when you were talking about Mac Jones, I didn't even think of him in the top 10 until the last week or so. Even after, remember when Devonta Smith said at the, where was it, either at the Senior Bowl or somewhere, he said that he thinks that Mac Jones is better than Tua, which was a very odd question to answer, I thought. Yeah. And I thought to myself, well, the only way you answer that question is that way is if you categorically absolutely feel that way. Because, you know, you realize that your answer might have repercussions, like major repercussions. Yeah. And I found that really interesting. So I really wonder right now. You know, we're hearing things, Paul, and I never want to totally dismiss something or give it a lot of legs, but you're hearing that Miami might have interest in trading for Deshaun Watson. Mm. Obviously, if they're interested in trading for Deshaun Watson, they would have to include Tua Tagovailoa in that trade. So I guess there are so many tentacles of this involving Sam Darnold, Tua Tagovailoa, Deshaun Watson, maybe way, way out there in the solar system, Russell Wilson. You just don't know. But this is still going to be a fascinating pre-draft, whatever, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is. But to me, the most interesting part is you're absolutely right. What do the Jets do? Because the Jets control their fate. If I'm the Jets and I am thinking very seriously of giving Darnold another go, I am not sitting there and taking the Oregon tackle, Penei Sewell. At number two. I'm going to trade down either with Carolina or somebody else who's going to give me the farm. Mm-hmm. Because to me, what I want to do is I really want to rebuild my team. The Jets aren't an expansion team. The Houston Texans are close to an expansion team. The Jets aren't an expansion team, but they're close. And if I'm the Jets, if I've decided I'm staying with Darnold, I am stocking up and getting as many picks as I can.
I completely agree. And for as much as the more I watch Zach Wilson, the more I like him, I still kind of like Sam Darnold. And I think the key right now, Peter, we say this every year well, why not just trade that number two pick? Why not just trade the fourth pick? And the offers usually aren't there. I think this year they're going to be there. I think people are going to want to trade up and get Zach Wilson because not everybody's going to get Deshaun Watson. Not everybody's going to get Russell Wilson. Nobody might get either one of those two. So I think sticking with what you have, even though it might be more of a C-plus than an A-minus right now, and taking backing up and getting another pick, I think this is one year where that makes sense because Darnold, I think, is pretty good. And I think there's going to be a demand to get up to that spot, whereas in years past, I'm not so sure that was the case.
Do summer projects your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can make the most of summer grilling and dig into gardening. Plus, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like power tools and storage to tackle any last-minute garage project. Summer your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select and stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
Yeah. Paul, we got a couple of minutes left. Let's finish with a little bit of a lightning round. Hit me with anything else that comes to mind, either column related or NFL related, and let's throw three or four things around.
All right. Shocker. I'm going to stick with the quarterback. Let's switch Wilson's, though, and go Russell Wilson. Do you think we're closer to Russell just continuing to coexist with Seattle and he stays right there and they put their differences aside and we're watching him in that uniform? Or are we closer to seeing him somewhere else?
I think my gut feeling is he's going to stay for at least 1 year. The Seahawks, I think, were not at all prepared for this, you know, for the dissatisfied Russell Wilson. They knew that he had some dissatisfaction, but they did not know that he was going to begin to discuss and air his, I don't even want to call it dirty laundry. I would just say air his dissatisfaction, because I don't think any of this is really, you know, dirty or anything like that. Russell Wilson has a different view of how he wants to be treated as a starting quarterback in the NFL. He reads and hears what happened with Tom Brady in Tampa this year. And how did it work? It succeeded so well. They won the Super Bowl when Brady was able to almost, I'm going to use an old Parcells cliche, even shop for some of the groceries. Hmm. Because obviously it was Brady who pushed until they finally got Antonio Brown in there. So I think he just wants to be a little bit involved. And look, I understand Pete Carroll is from the very old school. John Schneider is from the Ron Wolf school, the old school of personnel management. But I just don't think it's that hard for John Schneider to pick up the phone and to call Russell Wilson and say, hey, you know, let's talk about this before we do it. You don't have to change what you're doing in a revolutionary way, you know, to involve Russell Wilson more. My gut feeling, Paul, I think they stick one more year and try to make this work.
Let's stay in that division. Arizona, J.J. Watt, big news. He signed there this week. Can't make the kind of difference a quarterback can, but he's a, you know, multiple defensive player of the year. It's a team that's flirted with having a winning record the last 5 years, but they haven't been there. Do you think this is a good investment to help push them over the top?
Well, you know, as you look at J.J. Watt, he basically is, he's in his 30s now. You can look at this one of two ways. He's had major injuries in three of the last 5 years. Or you can look at it and said he's been totally healthy in two of the last 3 years, because both those statements are true.
Right.
Played 16 games in 18, 8 games in 19, and 16 games in 2020. So he's only missed 8 games in the last 3 years. But I think what surprised me, Paul, is the guaranteed money. And I didn't think that he necessarily was going to have to take a pay cut from making $17.5 million because he was going to have competition for his services. But to be guaranteed, I think Ian Rappaport reported this. It might have been Adam Schefter that he was getting $23 million guaranteed. Mm-hmm. It surprises me. It just does because his performance has not been at that level the last couple of years. But if you ask me if I think it's a good signing by Arizona, yes, absolutely I do, because if you now have to worry about both Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt, Watt either inside or outside, and Chandler Jones obviously more of an edge rusher, I think that gives them the kind of threat, the kind of two-pronged threat that I don't think anybody else in a very strong division has.
And finally, let's finish up this way if you have something on this individual. But my Sundays, I remember so well and so fondly, Peter, when I was a kid, having to be in front of the TV when the NFL Today came on. The unfortunate news last week that Herb Cross passed away. Even as a kid, I didn't know what the it factor was broadcasting, but I knew when he was talking that I wanted to listen. I'm like, this is a guy who knows what he's talking about. I should pay attention. It was just sad to hear about him passing. I know you wrote about him a little bit in your article. Any extra anecdote about Herb Cross? I'm sure people would love to hear, because I get the feeling I'm not the only one who thought a lot of him.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know, I didn't know Herb Cross. Basically, I started at Sports Illustrated in 1989, and he was gone from the scene, I think, in 91 was his last year on TV. So he sort of, he preceded me. But the one thing, and haven't gotten to know Brent Musburger very well over the years, I think he had such tremendous respect for Herb Cross because Herb Cross was on the show to be a voice of authority about what it was really like in the NFL. And he played in the NFL for 9 years. He made 2 Pro Bowls, defensive back. And I think the thing I always liked about Herb Cross is that he never pretended like he was either a know-it-all or that he was some great player. He played in the NFL, but, you know, he was very opposite what, you know, having the ethos of the way so many corners are these days. The hey, look at me, guys. He was as far from a hey, look at me guy as anybody probably has worked in television. And I think, you know, reading some of the guys, I saw Bucky Brooks, wrote a little bit about this, that I think for a lot of young black people in America, young black football players, and they would come, and on Sunday, they'd watch football on TV, and they would look at the NFL Today. And at the time, obviously, Herb Cross was really the most prominent black person, you know, on an NFL telecast. You know, it was Herb Cross and Phyllis George, Jimmy the Greek, and Brent Musburger. And so I think everybody looked and said, oh, yeah, well, we could be on TV too. And I think that really had a great impact as well. You know, the last thing about this is things happen so fast. And I guess it's hard to fathom if you really aren't, you know, sort of maybe in the media business. But the first thing I thought of Sunday night when I was processing this is in the last year plus, Jimmy the Greek, Phyllis George, and Herb Cross have all died. And then there was one. There was Brent Musburger. And I have to tell you, having talked to Brent, he was on the podcast one week in the fall. He's the radio voice of the Las Vegas Raiders now, lives in Vegas, does a lot of, you know, sports betting, gaming related work. But I just started to think to myself, when I have a conversation with Brent Musburger, I don't even know how old he is. 80. Right. I guess he's about 80, but I don't even think of him. I think of him like I knew him in the 90s and, you know, in early in this century, because he's still all there, you know, right. And he's still tremendously on the ball. But it's sad to see so many people who we grow up with dying away now.
Yeah, I remember thinking of Brent Musburger when he was at ABC. He came to Iowa City in 93, and Dick Vermeil was his color analyst. And Penn State was playing their very first game as a member of the Big Ten in 93 in Iowa City. So I got to meet with Brent, and wow. I grew up watching him on the NBA. So just to hear Brent Musburger say my name was like such a gift. And then I had it on the VHS tape, and I remember just rewinding it and just hearing Brent Musburger say Paul Burmeister made me feel like I was truly living a dream. One note also on Herb Cross, he had an unbelievable career after the way we got to know him. He was an athletic director at a small college in the Twin Cities. I think it was McAllister College. Yeah. I was in graduate school, and I wanted to be an athletic director. This is before TV started for me. And I tracked down his name because I always loved the Twin Cities. And I emailed him, and he called me back. I just expressed my interest in wanting to work for him to eventually become an athletic director. He took the time to call me, and I didn't love his message. He basically, in a very kind and professional way, said, listen, this is a Division III school. You grew up in the Big Ten. You played in the Big Ten. You're working in that office now. You're not going to like the way we have to do things here financially. It's the small time compared to what you got used to. So he kind of made the decision he wouldn't really consider me because of my background, but he did take the time to talk to me in a very pleasant way. And it wasn't quite the same as Brent Musburger calling my name, but having a conversation with Herb Cross, even with a message I didn't love, was definitely a highlight and made me think even more of him that he took the time to spend a little time with me.
Yeah, that's great. Paul, listen, great being with you. We'll talk during this pre-draft process and have some fun sessions. And, you know, it's interesting at this time of year, especially with no travel. I started to think about it this morning as we record this on Tuesday. What am I going to do for my column next week? And I thought, I have absolutely no idea. So, and I think it's going to be a lot of that way, because so often in the past, you know, if I might travel for two or three stories before the draft, I would have it in my head. Okay, I'm going to go see. I remember going to Wisconsin and doing Joe Thomas, you know, his senior year. And, you know, you sort of have it in your mind. You're really going to dig deep into some of these players. But, I mean, I just have no idea what the next few weeks will bring. But whatever it is, we'll talk about it and have some fun.
I would imagine you'll come up with something creative and insightful. So I look forward to talking about it with you.
My thanks to Paul Burmeister. We're going to be having these discussions leading up to the draft. Really look forward to him picking my brain and vice versa. But now, I had the chance to spend some time on the phone over the weekend with Zach Wilson, the highly regarded Brigham Young quarterback. He's going to be a very, very interesting player to follow in the next 2 months before the draft. So if you read my column this week, Football Morning in America, you read a lot about a lot of what you're about to hear, but there's a lot more where that came from. Here's my conversation with Brigham Young quarterback Zach Wilson. One of the things that I heard that you did on one of these trips is that you listened to Steve Young's book on tape.
Yep.
And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And tell me, because I mean, when I heard that you listened to that, one of the things that I kept thinking, because I know Steve really well, Steve's life seems like an absolute dream and wonderful and everything is great. But he has had more adversity in his life than almost anyone. And I'm I'm curious, why did you want to listen to the book and tell me about listening to it? Was that on one of the trips driving to California or driving back?
I think it was maybe a little bit of both for how long it maybe took me. I can't remember if it was there or back, but I know it was a huge part of my time driving. But I thought that was a super cool book because there were so many things Steve went through that you didn't really realize that he was, you know, struggling with, like being away from home and, you know, the struggles in his early college career of not even being a starter or being good enough to play. And, you know, some of the amazing coaches that came through the BYU program when he was there at the time. So yeah. I was super intrigued just because I think he's done everything the right way, had the right mentality of of how you should be at the professional level.
Yeah. John Beck said he thought that because I talked to him also, and he said that
yep.
he thought that part of what appealed to you was sort of the overcoming of the adversity, because in your situation, you were going to be made to fight for the starting job last year. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, I wonder if that part of his book sort of appealed to you in particular.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I thought that's what was so cool is, you know, you think with Steve Young, how everything was so smooth in his career when it's not. And
yeah.
I think that's what's interesting about mine as well is I wasn't a big recruit. I didn't have a lot of offers. I went to BYU as like just a normal 3-star recruit, nothing special, and nobody expected me to play early. And, you know, I ended up having a chance to play as a freshman. You know, something that I had to work for, but there was 9 quarterbacks in the quarterback room at the time. And then,
wow.
you know, even now I was nobody, last year, you know, and I was fighting for my starting job back after my sophomore year of having shoulder surgery and things, you know, things didn't go as well as we wanted to. And the coaches opened up a competition to try and earn the starting spot back. And so I was so determined to try and, you know, win that job back and prove that it was mine.
The last question I would ask you about the Young book is that, you know, when you are listening to it, I take it that you're really, what's really appealing to you are some of the things. And look, I remember the book well. I know Steve pretty well, and I called him after I read the book, and he ended up being on my podcast, but I said to him, the most amazing part of that book was the story that when you went to the 49ers and after a game in Anaheim that you guys ended up beating the Rams, you just figured, I can never replace Joe Montana. I'll never be him. Yeah. And you went out on the field and ran 10 100-yard dashes just to feel like you had done something. You know, because you never played, you never did anything, and you thought it was never going to happen. And when I read that, I said, man, and so when I knew we would be talking, I said, I bet stories like that are ones that really kind of appealed to you because you saw that it isn't all glory.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think back to some of the weird stories in that book of like Steve not cashing his checks.
Yeah.
In the game, and it's so cool his mentality of just like, I haven't earned it yet.
Like
he's always hungry for more, and some people just feel like they've arrived, and he was just not like that at all. And I thought that was such a cool lesson for me to learn is, you know, even if I am fortunate enough to go early in the draft and make it to a good team, you know, like I haven't done anything yet, you know, and you have to keep working for it. So I thought that was such a cool lesson from him.
Can you also now tell me, you let's say you're down in it's Irvine, right? Where you're working out with John?
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm living in Irvine, but it's Huntington Beach is where John and them are at.
Okay.
Golden West College.
Okay. And so when you're doing that last year, quite literally you're doing DoorDash as well?
Yeah, there was a couple times where I remember Mother's Day specifically, I missed Mother's Day because I was out here. And so I remember I sent my mom some flowers to like a delivery service or whatever. And I went in, you know, trained that morning. And then I went and delivered DoorDash for about 8 hours straight to try and make some money to help pay for the trip and food and get my mom some nice things for Mother's Day.
Wow. How much can you make in an 8-hour DoorDash shift?
I think I made a couple $100.
Wow.
So it wasn't too bad.
Wow. Okay, and so there's also a story, your offensive coordinator told me a story that some kid put online. You know, I might be crazy, but I think Zach Wilson just delivered me DoorDash somewhere in the BYU area. Did you ever do it there?
I did, yeah, that's funny. That's funny. I didn't even know that, but I'm sure someone, yeah. I used to go drive my moped around BYU in the summer because I would, you know, I didn't want to get a job because I wanted to be able to focus on training and making sure that was my, like, main priority. But every night, you know, randomly, I would go out and deliver food to get a little extra cash. I'd drive my moped around Provo.
and until you just heard that, did anybody ever recognize you?
I mean, not that I know of. I think there was maybe a couple, but, you know, nothing crazy. I got a few funny stares, but nothing besides that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about a couple things specifically about your life. When would you say that your life sort of turned from basketball to football? Was there a moment where you said, you know, I'm probably not going to play in the NBA. Maybe I should think football.
Yeah, it was probably my sophomore year in high school. I just remember, you know, I was so big in travel ball. I was playing over like 130 basketball games a year. I get to high school, you know, I had a pretty good freshman year. Didn't play as a freshman in football, but I played as a freshman in basketball. And so, you know, that was even still the plan there. And then going into my sophomore year, I had a pretty good sophomore year for football. Ended up starting halfway through the season. Did pretty well, and I got my first scholarship offer from Coach Fessy, who's actually our receivers coach now at BYU, which was so cool. You know, he's part of the reason why I went there. He was my first offer my sophomore year when he was at Weber State.
Okay.
So, you know, he was part of the reason I went there, but that was just kind of when I realized when I got, you know, my first offer there. And then later that season, I went to Fresno State, and I got offered, you know, it was kind of a random offer. I wasn't even expecting it from Fresno and Coach Tedford and his amazing line of quarterbacks with Aaron Rodgers and Derek Carr and, you know, all that. And so that was when I probably realized, you know what, football is probably the way to go. I was a skinny, underdeveloped kid, and so I knew I'd have to stop playing so much basketball if I wanted to put some weight on.
With Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Memorial Day savings for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Yeah. What, I mean, did you like basketball more than football at the time?
Yeah, probably at the time. I think, you know, I think that football wasn't the most exciting because I wasn't playing. I loved the game of football. I think the amazing thing of basketball was just the fact that you could play all year round. You know, football, it wasn't like that, and I think that's why it probably wasn't as fun to me. I couldn't, you know, I just go out with my friends and we drive to Vegas and go play in some tournament. You know, football wasn't like that until, you know, I got earlier. But now I look back and, you know, it's not even close. Like the game of football, you know, it's so fun to me. And I love it every single day.
What's your best day on a basketball court that you had in your life?
Oh, you know, I was thinking back to one that we had. We played a travel ball game in Dallas. With some of my buddies, and I think I remember dropping like 40, 45 points, and I felt like I was on fire that night.
Who was the best player you ever played against in one of those games?
Yeah, that's tough to say. I don't even know if I can remember. I know we've played against like Shaq's son before.
Yeah,
he's a pretty good player. One player that we didn't even play against that was actually part of our team that I was growing up with was Nico Mannion. He actually just got drafted in the NBA draft out of Arizona.
Wow.
This last year. He was a one-and-done kid, and he went to the Golden State Warriors in their second-round pick. So,
wow.
Me and him played all the way through until he moved to Arizona once he got to high school. So it was pretty crazy.
Wow. So... the other thing in your high school career that I thought was really interesting was that it sounded like if you got offered by Iowa, you might have gone there.
Yeah, so I actually got offered by them.
Oh, you did? Okay, sorry.
I did. So I got offered by them, but how it worked is, you know, they came out to the house, they visited, you know, they gave me an offer, but I wanted to go check out, you know, the facilities and the town and everything first, so... we had scheduled a visit to go out there, and I'm trying to think, like, they had offered another kid named Spencer Petras, who was committed to Oregon State at the time, and
yeah,
he was just taking his visit to Iowa. I was supposed to come right after him, and I remember it got out, some rumor had gotten out that, you know, I was interested in going to Iowa. You know, I remember at the time before visiting, you know, I was kind of interested, but I was just like, geez, like, you know, that's far from home, playing in the Midwest, all that kind of stuff. So I was like, I got to go visit and just check it out first. The night before we were supposed to leave to go on our visit, I guess the rumor that I was going on a visit there had gotten out, and that Spencer Petras kid from Oregon State had actually switched his commitment to Iowa the night before. So if I would have committed before I visited, I could have gone there, but I didn't want to go out there. I didn't want to commit, you know, until I went and checked out the facilities and all that stuff. So my trip got canceled the night of.
Wow. And was there any other close call on where you might have gone to college?
Yeah, I was really interested in Cal. So yeah. I was committed to Boise State for 8 months. You know, it's funny because every like big time offer that I had, whether it was Iowa, Minnesota, Oregon State, or Cal, those were like the bigger offers that I had. Every single one of them told me that they wouldn't even have known who I was unless I was committed to Boise State, because they just said they just don't recruit quarterbacks out of Utah.
Wow.
And they just said they only knew who I was because when they're going through the evaluation of finding quarterbacks, they always look at the best group of five teams, and Boise State's always one of them. And then they go and try and talk to, you know, who's ever committed there, and they do their research there. So, you know, I picked up all those offers late. Cal was awesome, but I wanted to be a mid-year guy. I always wanted to play in California. I thought that would have been super cool. But that one was tough because they didn't want me to come in January. They wouldn't have a scholarship for me until that summer, so I would have to come in at normal time. And, you know, I'd worked really hard in high school to graduate earlier to be able to go because I wanted to compete, and they kind of wanted me to be able to, you know, hang. And then also all of those schools that came through, I wasn't their first choice or probably even second. You know,
yeah.
I was kind of just like, oh, like these two guys – you know, went somewhere else, like, let's fall back on our list. And I didn't want to just be looked at as someone, you know, as someone's backup plan.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I read that you grew up kind of going to Utah games. And now, obviously, you go to BYU and, you know, they're such rivals. How was that seen at the time in the state of Utah and, you know, within your own family?
Yeah, super weird. I mean, my family, I mean, they switched over quick. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not going to lie. We still have a bunch of Utah stuff in our basement from when my dad played. We got his jerseys hanging up and,
yeah,
you know, pictures and all that stuff. But, you know, they're all diehard BYU fans now. You know, it's not even close. You know, maybe a couple aunts or uncles out there that are still Utah fans. But, you know, it's been a crazy transition how they've all come through. And then, you know, I remember thinking – so we had our season tickets on the 50-yard line, you know, second row, right next to Kyle Whittingham's family for 15 years. My whole entire life, we had season tickets. And I just remember I remember watching Taysom Hill and Kalani going for it on two at the University of Utah. I was sitting second row watching that game. And it was so crazy because that was Taysom's senior year. And, like, I just remember watching that game. And the very next year, I was the starting quarterback playing on that field for BYU. And that was just the
– wow.
Like thinking back to, like, geez, just last year I was sitting in that seat watching – a different quarterback for BYU, like no way I could have ever told myself, like in a year I'll be on that field for the other team.
Because at the time, you weren't committed to BYU at the time.
Exactly, I wasn't. Yeah. You know, I was just barely getting into the recruiting process. So
yeah,
you know, it was insane. All the people we sit around at the Utah games, you know, it's weird because they're like, geez, like this kid sat behind us for 15 years and now we're watching him play for BYU on the field. it's honestly crazy how it worked out like that.
Yeah, that's really unbelievable. okay, so I'm kind of interested in the adversity you had when, you know, when you were a sophomore, you get hurt. And when did you find out, and how did you find out that they were opening up the job, and last spring you were going to have to compete for the job again?
Yeah, it was after we had just lost a nail biter in the bowl game to Hawaii. We flew out there for our bowl game, and honestly, the offense did really well. We put up a lot of points, you know. But we were up and down. I threw an interception to end the game. You know, everyone was upset, tons of emotions, and you know, it's just in that conversation I had with me and our quarterback coach, Coach A-Rod. He just said, you know what, I want you to be able to re-earn your job and show this team that you're the guy. And so you know, the whole offseason he had talked to the quarterbacks about that, and he wanted us all to battle for it. And you know, I would say that was a tough time for me because, you know, the work I put in wasn't because of that. I was going to do that regardless. I was going to, you know, because I wasn't satisfied with my play anyway. So even if I was guaranteed the spot, you know, I was going to grind and do everything I could to make sure I had a better year the next year. So just having to deal with, like, the competition side of things, you know, it was frustrating, of course, because you were a starter before. But,
right.
You know, I just had a chip on my shoulder, and I had to be able to block out the adversity, you know, everything that people were saying. Are you going to be the guy? Are you going to be the starter? All this stuff. And, you know, I just had to block it out and just be like, you know what? Like, you'll see. Like, just wait. You know, just wait. And I just had to, you know, just keep doing my thing and just ignore everything. And so I think that adversity was something that just, you know, is helping me prepare for this next level now because, you know, I hope that, you know, there's going to be ups and downs in the NFL, and I hope I'm ready for them now.
When you – how many times last year would you say that – you went to California to train with John Beck?
Yeah, so I want to say right as quarantine hit and our spring ball got canceled, I came out here for man, I should have written down all these dates, but I came out here for I want to say about a month and a half. So I think I was out here for like 7 weeks straight. Hopped in the car. And I stayed down here for a whole 7 weeks. And that was like when I was out here majority of the time because I was coming like every single day as much as I could. So I just hopped in the car, stayed with Isaac Rex's family.
Yeah.
And then once we got back into voluntary workouts, which I think was closer to fall camp, like a couple months or a month away from fall camp, once we got into voluntary, that was when I started you know, really driving down every single weekend to work with those guys individually.
And so that would have been the summer, right?
Yeah, that would have been in the summer.
Yeah. Give me an estimate. Did you do that, what, maybe 4 or 5 times, more than that?
Yeah, I think I drove it about 6 times.
Yeah.
And what, then I what drove kind of
car? What kind of car do you have?
I have a Mazda 6, so just a little sedan.
Yeah. Okay, 10-hour drive each way.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you ever get in the car and say, what are you doing, you big idiot?
Yeah, sometimes I'm just like, geez, this is going to be a long trip. But, you know, I definitely felt like it gave me some time to just be by myself and, like, you know, clear my thoughts. It was honestly like a peaceful drive. Like, you know, nowadays with all this technology, I wish I had, like, a Tesla or something because then I wouldn't have to even focus on driving. But I think it was a good trip though, because it just gave me some time to be by myself, you know, listen to some good books. Like I thought it was a good experience.
Any other books stick out to you that you read that really you remember well?
I remember I read the book or listened to the book Relentless.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah, by Grover. Yeah, that was a good one as well.
Yeah. And what about podcasts? Were there any that you listened to regularly?
I started getting into like the Dave Ramsey stuff to get into like financials and yeah. You know, that whole thing.
What did you major in?
Communications.
Oh. Okay. Yep. What do you want to do with your life after football? Do you know yet?
Well, before, so I was trying to be a business major. Finance was just so tough at BYU. So then I ended up going into construction management because I was really interested in doing like the business side of construction, owning a construction company. Construction is just so big in Utah.
Yeah.
But the major was so long. So I ended up, you know, when I kind of figured out that this whole, you know, NFL thing could be a possibility, I went into communications because it's very broad. I'd be able to get into, you know, any business that I would like to in the future. And then my plan right now is I would love to be somewhere in broadcasting or like a color analyst or anything like that for the game one day when it ends for me. Kind of like what Steve's doing. That guy's got the gig.
He's got the gig, yeah. One day a week. You know, he has a good life, yeah.
Yeah, he's got the best job you could ask for.
Yeah, yeah. Have you gotten to know Steve?
Yeah, we text back and forth quite a bit, and he's talked to my family. You know, he's of great support. He's always, you know, having me reach out whenever I need anything, so he's a good guy.
You know what else is interesting about Brigham Young to me? That it's almost like, because of the quarterback tradition there, McMahon and Steve and Detmer and Beck and all those, there's so many good quarterbacks that it strikes me that there must be a lot of pressure on you when you go to Brigham Young to walk in their footsteps.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't as bad knowing those guys played so long ago, but it's cool knowing the tradition that BYU has of quarterbacks. Like, you know, even recently, I think John was probably the last highest drafted quarterback out of there, you know, in the second round, sixth pick of the second round. And, you know, it's definitely a great quarterback factory.
Yeah. I want to ask you two questions about this past season that, you know, it's got to be one of the weird, it'll be the weirdest football season of your life, obviously, because at the start of the season, you got this one schedule, you got Utah, Michigan State, Missouri, it's going to be a really cool kind of big time schedule. And then this gets canceled, that gets canceled. And so what was last season like overall to have to go through that?
Yeah, it was exhausting. I mean, for one, it was a whirlwind. I would say it was a little overwhelming at times, you know, spring ball getting canceled and everyone think, you know, oh, this is cool. Like, we get some time off. And all of a sudden a week or two goes by and you're like, geez, is football ever going to come back? And,
yeah,
you know, then we get into fall camp and, you know, that whole thing kind of gets messed up a little bit. And then the whole scheduling gets canceled. And I just remember all the reports of, you know, most likely the seasons are going to be canceled. And then you see the Big Ten cancel and the Pac-12 cancel. And then, you know, when both of them canceled, I'm like, wow, you know, this is just going to be a trickling effect. And luckily the SEC held strong and the Big 12 held strong. And, you know, honestly, I credit that to like why we played, because those two conferences, you know, kept going. But I remember just being so overwhelming. And we were so fortunate to get another schedule. But I just, you know, I keep looking back on the schedule that we were supposed to play and how I wish we could have played it. You know, it was such a great schedule with so many good teams. But I definitely feel like we could have, you know, done really well against a lot of those teams too. Like, I feel like, you know, we would have had the exact same season we had even against that schedule. And people probably would have given us, you know, a little more respect for what we've done.
So basically you had your schedule kind of invented on the fly, right? The Navy game gets invented, the Troy, Louisiana Tech, all these games, they just kind of get invented as the year goes on, right?
Yep, exactly. They just, you know, and it was every week that we were like, okay, you know, we just picked up another game here, another game here. And so we just kept hoping we could keep getting more.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you was the Coastal Carolina game. So that to me was, and I do not watch a lot of college football, but that to me was one of the most interesting games of the year because, you know, I'm obviously I follow sports and I hear that on Wednesday night, your athletic director, Tom Holmo, I read about this, basically walked in and said, hey, do you guys want to play Saturday? You know, to your coaches, and your coaches say, yeah. And you find out either that night or the next day, you're playing Coastal Carolina, you know, which is sort of like you. It's, you know, it's an under the radar, really, really good team. And what do you remember about that week? Because you guys were supposed to have a bye that week.
Yeah, I remember we were preparing like we were going to play. I remember all week we were like, you know what, we could pick up a game as late as Thursday. Like, let's practice like we have a game. You know, if it doesn't go as well as we think and we don't get one, then, you know, oh, well, we just got better because we practiced hard. So I remember we were going and going, and then Wednesday night came, and we had, like, a random team meeting, and everyone just got super excited because we're like, you know, this is a random meeting. Like, I'm sure Tom's going to tell us something. And, you know, he asked us if we all wanted to play, and we all wanted to. You know, we were pumped, and we were like, heck yeah, you know, Coastal Carolina, like, a top-ranked team. Like, this is going to help us, you know, get into the top 10 and all that stuff. And, you know, I just remember it was awesome. Like, even though it was such a last-second game, I felt like, at least for me, I had plenty of time to prepare. I felt like, you know, we spent the next couple days grinding in the film room. I had my girlfriend helping me with homework so that I could get on that flight and be ready to go. And
how did your girlfriend help you? Describe it.
Yeah, just helping me with, like, studying and making sure I got all my scheduling done and, you know, helping me get some of my work finished because, you know, she was a super good support in that aspect because, you know, it was pretty crazy at that time.
So you're at the time still balancing your classes plus trying to get ready for this game.
Yep, exactly.
The game itself was really fascinating because you guys had a bunch of adversity, don't play that well, and it comes down to the end. But I particularly wanted to ask you about the physical aspect of that game. You got the crap beat out of you in that game. You basically, you know, my remembrance of the game is that the announcers kept saying, oh, another big hit on Zach Wilson. And I wonder, what do you remember about the physicality that night?
Yeah, I just remember a lot of cheap shots going on. But, you know, that's part of the game. And it was a fun game. It was exciting having fans. And the emotions that went into that game were definitely way more than normal games, especially this last year without fans and stuff. And so I just remember, you know, those guys were fighting us, and it was exactly what I think we needed. We needed to be, you know, slapped in the face a little bit because I think that was good for us. And, you know, it got us to finish the season well because of it, but we didn't come out and play as hard as we should have. Yeah. They were a physical team, you know, but I definitely think we could have done better.
The last drive of the game, when you came within half a yard of, you know, scoring the touchdown to win, one of the plays is, you know, the play where you threw the ball like right from your goal line, I don't know, I'm guessing 35 yards in the air, you know, to one of your receivers who makes a leaping catch and comes down and kind of gets concussed with it. But that particular play is a play, I called a couple of people around the NFL, you know, just who I knew were interested in quarterbacks who had watched you, and both of them brought that play up. Adverse circumstances, tough game, physically demanding game that you had been hit a lot, and yet at the end you come up and make that play at the end. Can you describe that pass, what you were trying to do, and where you felt you had to put the ball?
Yeah, no doubt. I just remember, you know, we're going into the 2-minute drive, no timeouts, barely any time on the clock. And, you know, I was just smiling at the guys, trying to get them going, trying to, let everyone know, like, hey, we're going to drive this whole field, like no doubt. And so there was no question in my mind that, you know, we were going to figure it out. First play, we get a holding call, bounces us back a little further. I throw away the second one, and we're third and long. And, you know, I had a couple tells in that game, and they subbed at number four. He was lined up over the center. And I knew that when he did that and they were in their two-minute situation, that they were going to play a two-invert where the safeties would come and they'd play the seams. So the safeties would sink and the corners would actually roll and go and hug the high post, and then the backers would sprint underneath to the flats. So, you know, I knew exactly what coverage was coming based on where four was lined up. We had called a four-verts package there, and I knew based on timing and everything that I wasn't going to be able to hold the ball or throw the ball on time. I knew that I was going to have to hold it and maybe move around a little bit and try and, you know, find something down the field, because it was a drop eight defense that, you know, was really good against the pass. And so I remember just knowing in that coverage, when the corner to the field has a vertical seam by the slot, that he's going to roll over and try and take it away. And someone else is going to run underneath number one, the outside guy, and play in the flat. And so I knew that there was a shot where if I put that ball right over the guy in the flat and on the back shoulder to where that corner is playing the seam, you know, there's this little window right there, almost like a hole shot at a cover two, except, you know, it gets to a cover two a little bit differently. And I just remember, you know, if I keep my eyes down the field, I hold him and I just keep that corner looking, you know, that I can fire that shot in there, and that'd be a big gain and get us moving down the field.
Tell me where your eyes were on the play.
Yes, I was holding the middle of the field. I was really trying to get those corners to think I was throwing down the middle of the field.
Yeah.
I hit my three steps, stepped up, saw the corner's eyes on me playing the middle of the field, and then I gave it one quick look out to the outside and just fired it over that backer's head. You know, it's my receiver, and I knew he was going to get hit, and he did, and unfortunately he got a concussion and, you know, came out on that play. But, I mean, it was a huge play for us to even get in that situation and then give us a chance to come down and score.
The amazing thing was I thought that, you know, how close you came on that last play, that, you know, I don't know, a foot, 2 feet, whatever it was, but how emotional was that? What were you feeling after that game?
Yeah, man, that was rough. I just remember thinking, like, oh, like so close. Like it was just like right there. Like one more thing goes our way and like that's it, you know. And, you know, it's just part of the game. Like you just got to walk away and learn from those experiences. But I was frustrated and pissed just because I felt like we were so much better than that. But, you know, I thought it showed a lot about our team, how we were able to come back from that.
Yeah. I heard that after that game that you went around the locker room and you told everybody, and I'm going to paraphrase, you told everybody in essence, I got to be better, you know, some, whatever you did. But tell me what you did after that game with the guys on your team.
Yeah, really, I know everyone's beating themselves up. Everyone's, you know, probably thinking to themselves, like, oh, man, like, I didn't play good enough, or I didn't do this, I didn't do that. And so, you know, as a leader and trying to, you know, show my ability to lead on this team, you know, and I genuinely meant it. You know, there was definitely things I could have done better. And, you know, I went around to each guy and I told them to keep their head up and, you know, I got to play better. And I just wanted to let them know that, you know, even though they might think, oh, I'm the quarterback and, you know, I haven't made any mistakes, you know, whatever. That's not true. You know, I have to take accountability as well. And
yeah,
this is a team loss. And it's not beat themselves up on it, but, you know, that it happens and this is a team loss. And so that was one thing I was, like, trying to, you know, get across to the guys, is that I could have done a better job in that game as well.
when you decided to come out, and you decided to enter the draft this year, what do you think was the biggest factor that led to that?
Yeah, just my development. You know, it was like my third year playing. I felt like I was ready for the next step. I felt like physically I was ready. And then things that I had achieved in college, you know, we had a great season, ending 11-1. You know, as good as it was going to get, it was a very special year. No matter who you play, it's hard to win that consistently every single game. And so that was something that I took away from it. Playing with the same guys all the way through was awesome. And then really it just came down to, you know, injury too. I came out of the season completely healthy, which is, you know, pretty rare typically for people that play a whole season. And so I was super fortunate in that aspect as well, as I didn't, you know, I don't want to risk taking another chance. And, you know, I've always told myself if I had the opportunity to, you know, go in the first round, that that'd be an opportunity I can't pass up on.
Yeah. It's funny. Your situation reminds me a lot of Joe Burrow. And I know you watch a lot of you've watched a lot of Burrow. But your situation reminds me of him because probably entering his senior year, entering his last year, Burrow would have been maybe third, fourth, fifth round pick. I mean, who knows? And he certainly wouldn't have been a first round pick. And it's almost certainly the same thing with you. Do you draw parallels between you guys?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I probably learned the most off of his film than anybody's in that offseason. I was so impressed with the way that he played the game. And there were so many things that I applied to my game because of things that I watched him do. And I thought that was so cool, the way that he jumped up all the boards and everything like that. But, I mean, that was nowhere in my intentions before the year. My goals were to play a bunch, you know, way better than I had the year before and lead our team to do better. But, you know, I was nowhere thinking about coming out before the season until the end of the year. So
yeah,
I thought it was cool how well he did.
What's interesting about your situation is that, I mean, it's so crazy that you know, a year ago, even 6 months ago, nobody could have envisioned you being whatever, second, third, fourth pick in the draft. Does it strike you as, do you sometimes wake up and say, holy crap, what happened?
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and that's, you know, the thing that's like keeping me from getting my hopes up right now is I have no idea where I'm going to go in the draft. And so, you know, I'm sure the day that comes where, you know, I get drafted to the team I want to go to and it's a great situation. And, you know, there is days I'll just sit back and just be like, wow, like, where is this last year taking me? You know, it's just, it's crazy how quickly my life has changed.
Yeah. Two other things. When I had a conversation with Aaron Roderick, one of the things that he said was, he said, unlike any player I've ever had, he said, you know, a lot of times when a quarterback goes to the bench and he talks to either, you know, the coordinator upstairs or whoever, and, you know, the coordinator will say, what did you see? And then a dialogue will start. He said, but, you know, basically with Zach, it's not so much a dialogue. He can repeat every single tiny aspect of every play of a 10-play drive. So I just listened to it. And he said, many times I'll just think to myself, okay, well, what do you want to do next? You know, it's not like, okay, here's what we're going to do next. But where do you think that aspect of you and study? It reminds me of the play that you just described in the Coastal Carolina game, how absolutely intricate your memory and your knowledge of that play is. Where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it just comes with my, I really just think it all comes from the love of the game. Like I spend so much time in my studying and trying to understand the game and every little thing and every little detail. And I think that's what's so cool about mine and A-Rod's relationship is we're able to have conversations like that. And we're able to be open about what we think is good and what we don't think is working. And neither of us are going to take it hard, you know. And so I think that's what was so cool. You know, I really don't know where it comes from. But yeah. I just think it's a passion that I have for the game.
Yeah. It almost is like, you know, when Peyton Manning is exactly like this. I can ask him, hey, Peyton, when you guys beat the Ravens in the wild card game in 2006, you against Steve McNair, I think one of the best throws of your career was a little curl for a first down that Dallas Clark caught one-handed on what was basically the game-winning drive. I literally said this to him maybe 6 or 8 months ago, and he talked about that one play for 5 minutes with the kind of vivid detail that you just had of that Coastal Carolina game. And, you know, there's something about that that is so, it's so interesting because it goes to what you remember. Favre was like that. Even though Favre was crazy, Favre could remember every minuscule thing about a play that happened 6 years earlier. It's just, it's bizarre when you think about it that your mind has these little file drawers. You know, you have a Coastal Carolina file drawer. You open it up and you can remember everything about all these plays. It's really kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I've seen Steve Young do the exact same thing. So.
Yeah. You know, the one last thing I was going to ask you is this is an off-season unlike any other, really. It's even different than last year because last year there was a combine, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, your pro day is what, March 28, is it?
March 26.
March 26, okay. So that takes on a bit more importance, right, than normal because, you know, that's it. That's basically when everybody is going to see you.
Yep. Yeah. It's an interesting year, you know, with the pro day being March 26th. You know, fortunately, I feel like I've put myself in a good situation to where, you know, hopefully I don't have too many question marks and too many things teams are worried about. And I can already tell it's different just because of all the Zoom meetings and things that we're having right now. We're able to, you know, do that instead of actually having, you know, privates and everything. I think in April are all going to be canceled.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I'm going to spend time, you know, how can I be the most presentable on Zoom meetings and understanding the game and watching tape and being able to relate to coaches and spending that time with them at my pro day when they can make it out. And then all of May, June, and July after the draft, I'm going to be out here probably in California learning the playbook because there will be no OTAs and mini camps and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I would assume that these Zoom meetings, how many total have you had so far with teams?
Yeah, they haven't done a ton yet. I think I've done like 3 or 4.
Yeah. And do they put up video that you guys can share and then that you can talk about?
Yeah. I've only done one of those ones so far where it's like an hour. The other ones I haven't really dived in with like the OCs or QB coaches or anything yet. I've done one with a team where we really just like they threw clips up on the board from my last season and we're able just to, you know, throw that, you know, what you were thinking out there. And I love that. That's actually one of my favorite things to do.
Did anybody ask you what you were thinking on the Coastal Carolina throw?
No, they actually didn't bring that one up, but I know that some have talked about that one.
Yeah. And how much do you care about where you go?
I think situation is everything. I think, you know, money is definitely second to situation. I would definitely turn down money to be able to go to a good situation. I think that's everything.
Yeah. Are you excited about the whole process? Or do you have trepidation? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I'm so pumped just to find out what team I'm going to. I just get anxious every day, but it's such a great spot to be in, especially in this pre-draft stuff. And so that's why I'm just soaking it up each and every day.
Yeah. And last thing I would ask you, when teams ask you, if they ask you, what kind of player in person are they getting in Zach Wilson, what do you say?
Yeah, I mean, somebody that's going to give it everything they have. Somebody that's going to dedicate everything that they do to this game and to helping their team be better and to elevate everyone around him and, you know, to hopefully bring in a championship.
My thanks to Paul Burmeister and Zach Wilson this week. A lot of interesting things to mull over. Speaking of interesting things, you're going to want to listen to the Chris Sims Unbuttoned podcast this week. That also drops today on Wednesday. And you're going to want to listen because he's got his quarterback rankings for the draft. And so just to let you know that he doesn't always go, or in fact, he very rarely goes with popular opinion. You might remember that 3 years ago, he was very high on Lamar Jackson, even though Lamar Jackson ended up going 32nd overall, fifth quarterback in that draft. Chris loved him that year. Also, last year, he had Justin Herbert over Tua Tagovailoa. It didn't fall that way in the draft, but it sure looks like Justin Herbert has an edge over Tua right now. So I don't want to give anything away, but I do think that he'll have an unconventional top of his draft quarterback board. So you're going to want to listen to that. Chris Sims Unbuttoned podcast this week. A lot of good information coming with that. And I'll see you next week back on the Peter King podcast. Again, next week, we'll have a good discussion about current events in the NFL with Paul Burmeister.
Summer projects your way with Memorial Day savings from the Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can make the most of summer grilling and dig into gardening. Plus, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like power tools and storage to tackle any last-minute garage project. Summer your way with Memorial Day savings from the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select and stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.